This is Sam N., one of the managers here at eVinyl.
This is Big Al, another manager here at eVinyl.
And we're here today to talk about something musical, but not an album or a song. We're going to talk about a movie called A Complete Unknown, which, as we're recording, is out in theaters. And it's about a fictional account or a biopic kind of thing of his years between 1961 and 1965. And I'm not going to talk too much about the plot. I saw it about 10 days ago. Alan saw it last night, and we have not really discussed it in any detail. So since Alan, you had the most recent viewing, I'll let you start and give your thoughts, and we'll see where this conversation goes.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sandy. It was a very entertaining movie. And as somebody who loves Bob Dylan, it was great to see more about that era. And, you don't know what's fictionalized and what's real, but it's still just really cool watching his interactions with Joan Baez. And here's something already. His girlfriend in the movie, they were calling her Sylvie, which was really throwing me off because he was famously romantically involved with a woman named Susie Rotolo.
Right.
He's on the cover of, I think it's Free Will and Bob Dylan with Susie Rotolo. I mean, that's something I knew. And they were calling her Sylvie in the movie last night. So that threw me off a little bit. But okay, nevertheless, we know this wasn't a completely historical account. It was a very well-made movie, most of all. I wonder what was real, what wasn't real. I wonder about the violence at the Newport Folk Festival. I'm skeptical about that. I also really enjoyed the interactions with Woody Guthrie. I had, I'd always heard that he visited him on his deathbed, but I wasn't aware that he visited him several times. So that was interesting. But mostly, it was a well-made movie that I enjoyed. And even if I didn't know who Bob Dylan was, I think I would have enjoyed the movie. It was just, a good dramatic movie. Also interesting to see how Dylan was portrayed sort of as an asshole while he's brilliant and a genius and, a giant in his craft, which is of course what we know, I guess, but it was just interesting to see it, spelled out like that. And, also that Bob endorses the whole thing, which I guess is really no big surprise.
Yeah. So it does have a fairly long running time, which movies tend to do these days, which is okay. I will give you, so since you just saw it last night, I will tell you that you can find like everything now in the world of endless information. You can find the what's real, what's not. And, and that character is definitely, the one you're speaking of, but they renamed her for some reason.
Yeah.
And I think they were trying to say in a very obvious way, this is a dramatization. It's not, they didn't change Joan Baez's name to Jane, but whatever. She was already famous.
Right. Exactly. Why did they change the name of this one character? And I looked it up and the response was that Dylan wanted to do that in deference to her. I mean, she passed away, I think, in 2011, but he said that she was a very private person, and she wouldn't have wanted, Dylan thought he wouldn't have wanted her name to be out there in that context in the movie. Yeah. So they changed the name, which just confused me throughout the movie.
Yeah. But, yeah. No, if you like music and whatever, you can't, I mean, I'm not a, like the idea of being a Dylan aficionado, and we're probably going to record some other stuff on maybe a couple of his albums and talk about more of his work. But for this one, we're just going to talk about this film. So here's my view. Was my first take was that my niece, who's like 20 something years old, went to see it with her dad as a music fan and said, nothing really happens. And then my wife says after the movie, nothing really happens. And I go, How can you say nothing really happened between 1961 and 1965? Because in the movie, there's nothing like on the screen, like they make reference to things. But here's the thing that really got me. And I also, you can find out like the whole thing leads up to him going electric, you know, and that was a big thing. And I didn't really know a lot about it, although of course there's been a ton written about it. But I just, again, I'm not an aficionado of his history and stuff. So there is a lot of, well, this happened, but not for this reason. But what I think was less obvious to me was that it was pretty apparent that he was he was recording an album, you know, that, you know, with electric guitars, you know, it wasn't like,
right.
And I think in the movie, I didn't really realize that they all kind of knew that was possible. It wasn't like he surprised everybody. Like, I think that's the part I didn't get that there was a certain anticipation that he was going to do that. And they were trying to talk him out of it more than he, you know, and of course the fans, you know, the folk fans reacted the way they did and that.
Just one thought on all that, you know, about the movie that just seems unrealistic. It's just that, you know, well, the drums were on the stage. You know, the bass amp was on the stage.
Yeah.
I mean, how could that have been a surprise?
Okay, you know, so what I heard, and I don't want to dwell too much on this, but what I heard was it wasn't that they were opposed to electric instruments. It wasn't that they wanted him to play acoustic. They wanted him to play those songs, I guess. Because
Blowing the Wind, Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah, and I think there was this idea that that it was because he was playing electric, and that's one of those things. If you go back and go through like the 10 things that were incorrect, that they do talk about. Yeah, there were electrified instruments, but that wasn't really what people were saying. You can't have electrified instruments. They were saying this is a folk thing, and you're playing loud whatever rock music. And
okay, Johnny Cash played with electric instruments.
And that didn't
bother anybody.
But he was such a hero, like, you know. But I want to go back to the premise of the movie, which is a complete unknown, right? Which you could debate every lyric the guy writes, you could delve into. You know, he wasn't a complete unknown. His family and friends knew who he was, but, you know, I mean, he was unknown in terms of where he was trying to get, you know, his celebrity, whatever. But I think
But you could even debate that, though. Sorry to interrupt you. I mean, to his family and friends, he was Robert Zimmerman.
That's true. That is true. Okay. Yeah, changed his name. Okay. Fair point. Again, everything, he's an enigma, right? Everything is, and I,
sure.
some of that's put on, and I think some of that's a sense of humor, and some of that is, I think all these geniuses are all, every genius has a little social, whatever, like, you know, maybe he believed he was in the circus or whatever. He traveled with the circus or whatever. He possibly believed that. I don't know. But anyway, the thing that I thought was the most interesting to me was the idea that you're there when you hear these songs for the first time, or that. So there's scenes where even in the first scene when he plays the song for Woody Guthrie, to just kind of go, like, I don't know, when you see somebody that good the first time, right? Like, imagine like just that, for not knowing who this guy is, and then to hear that song, or to hear him, you know, work out Blowing to the Wind in his apartment, whatever. Like, you know, as these songs, and just the way that the actors reacted to it, and just to watch their faces just go, like, without going, you're a genius, Bob Dylan. I thought that was really the kind of secret sauce of the movie was, there's a scene.
Point.
There's a scene in at the folk festival. I'm not ruining. This is not a spoiler alert by any stretch. Okay, so there's a scene in the folk festival where he's playing, you know, like a Rolling Stone for the first time, right? At least at the folk festival. And somebody gets up and walks away. He goes, yeah, I saw him when he played that song, and I had to go to the bathroom. Like, what? Like, what?
No, that is a spoiler alert, Sandy. That's a huge part of
the movie. No, I don't think anybody even notices that.
but of course somebody screams, you know, you're Judas.
Which is famous. The other thing that's music history, which, you know, which is the Al Kooper playing the organ, you know, the Hammond organ. And so we'll talk a little bit about his music, but now when I hear that song, what people say is, if you listen to how he plays and you realize that he just sat in, and I guess he has the sheet music, he must have something in front of him, but all he knows is the chords. So if you listen to it now, his organ is a little behind, and it's almost like makes the song. It's like,
okay,
I never noticed it until somebody said it when they were talking about the movie. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff where it makes you appreciate things a little bit more. And it also, you know, I had tears in my eyes when he played that, you know, it's like, wow, that is just, you know, it's such a, I don't know, man, it's just, that's the beauty, the power of music. And that's why we're here talking about these things,
right?
And,
right.
You know, are so passionate about it, but man, I mean, yeah, I just, cause you realize it's when something's that good, like it's just that good, and it changed, right. Like it's the first 6 minute pop song and whatever. Like,
right. And you know, that gets back to what you were saying before, when, you know, people's reactions to him, the artist's reactions to him. And there was just one scene, and I don't remember exactly in what appearance this was. I mean, I think he was just playing at some bar in Greenwich Village, and Joan, who at that point was not on good terms with him, happens to pop in and watch him.
Yes.
I don't remember what song it was anymore, but she's, you know, you could tell that she's just like, I don't like this guy, but she listens to the song and she's just like, oh my God, this is so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. So when you say that's the secret sauce, I hear you on that. I mean, I really appreciated that too.
Yeah. That's the answer to the question. Well, nothing really happens. Like, that's the answer. Because even like, they do make reference to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right.
And then he plays Masters of War. Are we ruining the movie? I'll tell people it's a spoiler alert. There's some spoiler alerts.
Okay. But... yeah, you know, Sandy, that's the scene, actually. That is the scene. They just had, you know, Walter Cronkite on, you know, talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah. And then Joan goes for a walk and stumbles upon Bob in some club, and he was playing Masters of War.
Yeah, that's
so right. So you totally, that was totally the same scene. And thanks for reminding me on that.
So if you're 21 years old and you've never heard Masters of War, right? And that scene, nothing happens.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't understand why people could say nothing happened.
Because
even just from the whole thing that happened in Newport. I mean, which, by the way, that's not a spoiler alert. I mean, this is just history. I mean, people who are, most people going into this, or at least lots of people going into this movie know this. It's not you're not supposed to not know it.
Right.
I mean, that happened. I mean, that's something happening. And I wonder about the violence at Newport. I mean, I guess it was Alan Lomax who punched Albert Grossman. Okay,
You want me to tell you the real story? Because I read.
Yeah, go ahead. Did that really happen? I don't think so. I'm going on the record saying I don't think that really happened.
Okay. Go ahead. According to whatever thing I watched, Mojo, it was like a Mojo, whatever, some website that has things like this. The 10 things in the Dylan movie, you know, follow us and like us, whatever, subscribe. So according to that thing that I watched, they did have a fight, but it was about the way that he introduced, is it Paul Butterfield, the blues band?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was the way that he was mad at him about that. It wasn't, it happened, but it wasn't for the reason that it appears in the movie.
So they had a fist fight.
Yeah. And it's also true that Pete Seeger was trying to cut the wires or something.
I had heard
that is something that was, yeah, that's something that I think was happening. But yeah, it's, you know, it's, so again, I, you know, it's not a documentary, right?
Right. Right.
But I think they were trying. I think they were trying to say this. There was a lot of stress around the whole time of, you know, this music. You know, if you talk about, like, we can get into the history of rock music and where it was at that point in time, and it wasn't like this dominant thing, and folk music was there, and we don't have even, I don't think we have a folk bin. Maybe we should put one in the,
oh, we got a folk bin, right? Come on.
Think so. Sure, we better put one in. Okay. So anyway, I will just add that we are recording these as not necessarily episodic, we're just adding a feature here where we're going to tag all of these recordings. And this is the first one we're tagging as movie.
Okay. So, hey, Santa, before I wrap this up, I don't know if you're intending to wrap it up. I got a question for you.
Sure.
Now, I could be confusing it with Dylan's electric tour when he went overseas, but I thought he did an acoustic set and then an electric set. But that did happen on his European tour. In what you read about what was real and what wasn't real, did they mention anything about him having started with an acoustic set?
I don't recall, but I think that's true. I mean, I think they do, you know, Johnny Cash tells them to go back out in the movie.
Okay.
There were definitely a lot of spoiler alerts here if people don't know, but I didn't know the details, but I don't think it really matters. Like,
it matters a little bit to me because I'm testing my knowledge and like, do I have that right? Do I not have it right? And I was under the impression there was an acoustic set at first, and then he came out and did electric, but I could be confusing that because I know for a fact that's what happened in Europe when he went to Europe.
Yeah.
So,
I think the other thing, and yeah, we'll wrap it up. And I was saying it doesn't matter in terms of, it's not a spoiler one way or the other, right? It's like, we've established that this is a dramatization, not a documentary. But, the thing that, there's one very fast scene in the movie where he gets a check, right? So you get that he's getting popular. But then all of a sudden, you know, he's not necessarily a starving artist either. And I think that, you know, once you have that luxury of, you know, the security of, you know, you're not, you know, because now, like, we can have a whole conversation about his current way he tours and whether he's not a crowd pleaser or whether he cares or not. Right. But clearly at that point, he's trying to be liked, he's trying to develop a fan base, he's trying to have a career, you know. And I think that this idea that I'm going to just do what I want to do and I'm not going to give the people what they want, so to speak, I think that evolves, right?
Well, so, you know, I think it evolves before our eyes in the movie because, yes, initially he's trying to grow a fan base, but then as soon as there's all this adulation, he rejects it. He doesn't want it. He's not comfortable with it. So you see that, and it's, I wouldn't even call it an evolution. It's just an about face.
Well, I think that what he... we're basing it on what the movie is and whatever.
Right.
I think what my view of it is that he didn't want to be pigeonholed as this, right?
And oh, for sure.
He didn't want to have to go up and give, I keep saying give the people what they want, but I think it's like, you know, he, you know, even through his career, he's always done, you know, taking little turns and stuff like that. And I think for some of these artists, he's not the only artist who said, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to break up the band and do a solo record or whatever. I think it's, you know, they're looking to shake things up and maybe, you know, it's a creative thing or whatever, but you know, I often wonder, we can leave it here and we can, you know, and we'll definitely be talking more about this artist for sure. Maybe in our next recording, but I think it is part of his persona, and I think it's part of his marketing that he's this, you know, enigma. And I just think maybe that's just who he is, right? You know, but I don't think it's all contrived or whatever. But I also think, and this I've been told, and I think he has a really good sense of humor. And I think some of this stuff is sort of like him. It's like pranking the rest of the, like, in a certain way. Right. Like I'm, you know, whatever. I don't know if that applies to whether he was wanted to play, you know, electric guitar at a folk festival, whatever. But I think there is a certain amount of, you can't pigeonhole me and whatever. But I think it's also a making fun of these people because they think all I can do is that. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. No. I think so.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we will wrap this up. And, you know, while we were planning on this, there are lots of Bob Dylan movies. I don't know if we're going to do any more. We may do other movie reviews for sure.
Well, I'd like to see the Scorsese one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I started watching Don't Look Back, which is a documentary from the 65. That's also around, but that's him at that time. But anyway, all right, so this was good. Thanks everybody for listening. Of course, you can check out our bins and check out our Patreon and all these other things that we have. And for now, we are going to say, I'm going to go two thumbs up from the Alan Sandman, from the eVinyl management team. And with that, we will sign off and say bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.
Hold on, Alan. I got to stop this recording.